This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, good morning. You are listening to The Morning Run. I'm Shazana Mukhtar, together with Philip C. and Wong Xiaoning. We are going to take a look at how global markets closed yesterday.
Nespresso, bringing you the perfect blend of global market analysis and insights.
Finally, after a whole series of red, US markets are up. Dow was up 0.9%, S&P 500 up 1%, and Nasdaq up 1.3%. Over across in Asia, relatively mixed. The Nikkei was down 2.2%, Hang Seng was up 0.3%, Shanghai remains closed, STI Singapore down 0.7%. Back home, FBM KLCI up 0.5%.
All right, and for a diagnosis of the forces markets are responding to, we speak to Jeffrey Halley, Senior Market Analyst at Oanda. Good morning, Jeff. Happy Wednesday. Well, we were seeing tech stocks get hit as a result of the carnage on Wall Street, although they have recovered somewhat. Why do you think this sector was being uniquely targeted?
There's a couple of factors here. One, technology stocks have the richest valuations on Wall Street. They've been the biggest beneficiary of the pandemic rally in equities, but also, so therefore they have further to fall. But secondly, they are, because of those valuations, they are more sensitive to perceptions and the changes of interest rates. Now, if the Fed is going to start tapering monetary policy and start raising interest rates next year, that would affect the forward-looking component of those very rich valuations, and thus they are much more sensitive to changes in the direction of US monetary policy. And this is more than likely why we saw technology get carried out on a stretcher earlier this week.
Now, I want to ask a question about China, Jeffrey, and that's because we do see some news coming out of Bloomberg that smart money from Soros to Elliott, they're a little bit more wary about China's stocks, especially with all the policy changes. In fact, one of them said that, you know, it's like, it doesn't matter whether it's a private company or an SOE, they all look like SOEs at the end of the day, or state-owned enterprises. Do you agree with that view, or is the smart money still in China, actually?
I actually do partially agree with that view. This new shared prosperity policy and the reach of the government into all sectors of the economy, well, officially now, I believe will impact China's growth going forward. That doesn't mean they're going into a recession and they're going to stop growing. I just don't think that they're going to grow at the same rates that we are all used to over the last 20 years. There's definitely been a sea change in government policy. And as we know, the government runs everything in China. And I don't think this has yet still been fully priced into the market. What we see are dip buyers coming into Chinese equities, but I don't think we've run our full course yet of that policy. Eventually, China stocks will fall to the level that offsets that government slash regulatory risk, but I don't think that process is done yet by any shape of the imagination.
I mean, one of the spillovers is Hong Kong, right? Because we've seen Hang Seng essentially fall to record lows, I think, what we see here. So, you know, if you think about it, should investors, you know, flee stocks and relook at their portfolio and shift to something like bonds and currencies instead to hedge equity risk?
I'd be a bit cautious about bonds. One, bond yields are at record lows, so you're not going to make much money by buying bonds at the moment anyway. But if the world is starting to slowly unwind this quantitative easing and monetary policy stimulus from the pandemic, logically, that would be negative for bond yields. Now, prices move inversely to yield. So when bond yields go up, prices go down. So technically, if you buy a bond now and yields start moving higher through 2022, you're going to lose money there. I think a better strategy would either be to either move to the sidelines and perhaps sit in US dollars, or perhaps rotate more out of the tech-facing, richly valued stocks and perhaps into boring stuff that always pays a dividend, like utilities or perhaps these more value-facing, commodity-looking companies.
All right, Jeff, looking over to Japan now, the new prime minister has failed to excite financial markets with the Nikkei 225 extending recent losses. I mean, what do you think? Does Kishida have something up his sleeve to get the economy up and running again?
Well, they need to get past the election now on the 31st of October. I think that's going to be held. I think that's what I saw earlier in the week. A lot of the Nikkei rally pre his confirmation as the new Japanese prime minister was based on the premise that the incoming Prime Minister to replace Mr. Suga would enact a whole pile of fiscal stimulus, open up the government goodie bag, so to speak, and start throwing money around into the end of the year. He's pretty much promised that. So I think it's more a case of buy the rumour and sell the fact. Now, the move down in the Nikkei has been complicated also by the fact there's been a lot of speculative zeal in that index anyway by retail investors. And it when the US fell, it was caught up in that slump as well. So it's a combination of factors have come together there.
Now, one asset class which has really jumped, of course, is natural gas. I think overnight, close to 20%, which is at a 9-year high. Of course, followed by Brent crude and WTI. Should we get worried about this? Will it derail global growth? Because, you know, there's going to be questions about inflation being more than transitory.
I think we need to get through the winter here. I think the Northern Hemisphere has been caught off guard here, particularly in Europe, where they haven't bought enough gas and they've got below seasonal averages in their storage for the winter. China is clearly facing challenges as well. And this is partly because of this pandemic rebound and this industrial boom. But China also has distortions. The price of electricity is fixed in China that you can sell to consumers, but power companies have to pay on the open market for the inputs like natural gas or coal or oil. When those rise, but they can't raise electricity prices, that's part of the problem. But I do believe when you touch on inflation, it's inevitable that that will flow through because China will have to raise power prices to consumers. The best cure for high prices is high prices. And that will inevitably flow through to more inflation. So to me, inflation is looking less and less transitory by the day, depending on what your definition of transitory is. And I think we're all going to have to get used to paying higher prices for stuff that we once took for granted.
Does this explain why Bitcoin surpassed 50,000? It's now 51,475.
I've got to say, I'm really confused by that Bitcoin move. Now, looking at the technical picture, it did look bullish, and I said as much last week, frankly. But that one's really caught me out, and I'm scratching my head on that. But
you're not the only one, don't worry. Yeah, I can't figure it out, too.
I consider Bitcoin a tradable versus an investable asset, and we've touched on that before. Mm. And the technical picture does look constructive for Bitcoin when you look at it in isolation like that. But I'm struggling to see any real one particular driver moving cryptos higher at the moment, because the US dollar is rising as well. So we can't be playing the currency debasement idea, and interest rates are creeping higher in the US as well. So, you know, maybe it's not such a great inflation hedge either, but I think the momentum is definitely higher. And I think you just stay with that as a trader rather than an investor until it no longer is.
Jeff, thanks so much. That was Jeffrey Halley, Senior Market Analyst at Owanda, talking to us about the outlook for the markets, whether, you know, inflation is transitory, and also about Bitcoin and just the forces that are moving it upwards. He doesn't know. We don't know either.
It's technical, right? That's his explanation, because it is true. It's very hard to explain the fundamental movements of Bitcoin, what drives it. It used to be a hedge against inflation, but I think now it's gone beyond that, whether it's gone mainstream and people literally just watch for, you know, these 100-day moving averages or 50-day moving averages, and like technical chartists, they like use terms like death knell and all that.
Well, what I'm even more confused is why is it OPEC is not basically raising production? Because prices are going up, as you were saying, right? Natural gas, 9-year high. West Texas, 7-year high as well. So I'm wondering why OPEC hasn't really upped its production capacity as much as what they were anticipating, because Goldman is already forecasting that oil will hit 90, right?
Maybe that's the sweet spot for them, you see. Because if you increase production, what happens is that prices will naturally come down. So maybe there is a point whereby you can keep your production high, you reap the benefits of that additional profit, rather than pumping the, you know, the system through with more oil.
Sure. But there's
so, you know, there's some maths involved, and also every country has a different break-even point in terms of cost of production where their profit is maximized.
But that's interesting, because break-even costs, like in Saudi Arabia, is like $20-$30. So it's not like we are talking like 50-60 as an economics piece, right? So 90 is when you start saying, oh, shale makes a lot of sense and all that kind of stuff. So I really am wondering why is it that there is no pressure overall in governments around the world to put pressure on OPEC to say, let's raise production a bit more.
I don't know whether this is related to every government wanting to shift towards renewable energy, right? So you are saying you don't want to come out and say, hey, guys, raise oil production, when your other mantra has been, you know, let's cut our carbon credit, let's be carbon neutral by 2050, let's have fewer greenhouse emission gases. So governments are at a confusing point. And we had this discussion yesterday actually in China.
Exactly. And I think the conversation with Michelle Leong from Bloomberg Intelligence was that it's not going to be linear. There are going to be many potholes. And that's why I think the expectation is that high oil prices will be prevailing for quite some time, because we're not going to move to renewable energy anytime soon very fast.
And it won't be smooth. It's not going to be linear.
It definitely won't be smooth. Exactly.
Stay tuned to BFM 89.9.
Nespresso starts your morning right together with the Morning Run, bringing you the perfect blend of global market insights with expert guests.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.